Thank you.
Somebody that's better at that than me can do that. Okay.
Okay. Hey, everybody. I'm Alice, and I'm a grateful member of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's been a long day, and for those of you that are really here, still with us, I want to say congratulations for being committed to a new life. Congratulations for being committed to deepening your recovery. You know, the thing that I was really, you know, I'm going to repeat myself, struck by is when Ashley said that God was in her like butter was in milk, right? And so the thing that you want is in you. The joy that you want is in you. The freedom that you want is in you. And it's simply about doing the work. So I am supposed to do an hour. We're running a little bit late. So I'm going to see what God has for us, right? And I want to talk about all of step 12, right? You know, again, Arisa is right, as always. Step 1 has 50 pages, but step 12 has 75, right? And so I'm not going to go through, obviously, all 75 pages, but I want to do a shortcut. I want to talk to you about the three parts of the 12th step. And I want to line them back up to the three parts of the solution in Alcoholics Anonymous, like I did for us in step 1, right? And like I hope that I did for us in step 4. So what am I talking about? You know, when you look at the logo of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's the circle. And for me, the circle represents my whole universe. You know, I come to Alcoholics Anonymous and I'm under the delusion that I have, you know, this is a stop drinking program. And what I want to give God is my drinking. Except that's not what the real problem is. The real problem, explained to me in the book, is that I have a threefold illness. I'm bodily sick, I'm mentally sick, I'm spiritually sick. And what the book tells me, and I believe this, this has been my lived, real experience, that when I straighten out spiritually, my mental and physical problems resolve themselves. Like I'm able to address them. I'm able to stand up. I'm able to walk towards the light. And so when I look at the 12th step for me, right, has three parts, just like the triangle that's in the center of the circle. My body, which we call unity, my spirit, which we call service, and my mind, which we call recovery. And in the 12th step, I have these three parts. And what are the three parts? Well, the first part, you know, my friend calls it a promise, right? Like the promise is having had a spiritual awakening as a result of the steps. I don't think of it as a problem. I think of it as a requirement, a prerequisite, but whatever makes you happy, right? I've got to do the work to get me out of the way to let the spirit come in. I'm in the way. I'm what's blocking it. My resentments, my fear, my judgment, my personal favorite, self-righteousness, right? And so this first part of the three parts of the 12th step tells me, do not go out carrying the message as found in the book if you don't have it. When I came in, we used to always talk about two-steppers. Do you guys still talk about two-stepping? I get sober and I think I understand step 1 and then I want to go and do step 12. What are you carrying? Right? And I mean that because this is life or death. And there are people who think Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't work because somebody's doing BB and not AA, and they're like, well, you know, AA didn't work. No, BB didn't work. AA works. And so this first part is a prerequisite, and it's really a promise too. If you do the work as outlined in the book, you will have a spiritual awakening. And what do we mean by a spiritual awakening? The second appendices, a personality change sufficient to bring about recovery. What? I thought I was waiting for a white light experience, like God was going to come down and the wind and the breeze and the tree. No, I change. See, what I come in wanting is for you to change. I change. I have a personality change sufficient to bring about recovery. That's how I read the second appendices. I invite you to read it. If you think something different, talk to me. I'd love to hear it, right? That's the way that I read it. And what it warns me about is what the set-aside prayer invites me to step out of, thinking that I know. I love it, you know. There wasn't Google back then, so let's cover people in grace. It's actually not Herbert Spencer, although we say that. It's William Pally, but, you know, they didn't have Google, so let's don't be mean. And so it is that the thing that is going to keep me in everlasting ignorance is contempt prior to investigation. Have all the contempt you'd like after you investigate. But if you say no to something and you don't know what it is, I don't like broccoli. Well, I mean, that's maybe a bad example, but you know what I mean? Like, I know, I don't like that meeting. I don't like those people. I don't like that process. People who have not done the four step are the people talking about how hard it is. Well, how would you know? I mean, really, how would you know? And so there's this contempt, this desire to reject something outright before I explore it. And I would argue that that's about fear. And fear is the thing that holds me in bondage. And so this first part of the three parts of the 12th step is really saying to me, hey, if you do the work, you will have this profound shift in the way that you respond to life. How beautiful is that? And if you do that, then we invite you into these other two things. What are the other two things? Carry the message and practice the principles in all of our affairs. Now, we talk a lot about the carry the message part. Man, we like talking about the carry the message part, right? We got a whole chapter, right? And there are some people who read the book up to 103 and they'll get to the end of that chapter. No shade, my friends, I love them. And then they stop. No shade. I'm not suggesting that carrying the message to another alcoholic isn't critical, vital, necessary for my own survival. But I'm suggesting that if I only do that, that I'm just sober. That it requires doing the third part of the 12th step to reach sobriety, to reach recovery. What am I talking about? I think that Alcoholics Anonymous offers us three options. Anybody old enough to remember the three doors? Door number one, door number two. What was his name? Barb, him, Price is Right. Door number one, I am simply abstinent. I am no longer ingesting any mind-altering substance. In my experience, that is misery. Because I was taking in alcohol in order to help me treat the insanity that I'm experiencing internally. And if I take the alcohol away and I don't replace it with anything, things are probably going to get worse. Door number two, I have sobriety. What is that? I'm working one or two sides of the triangle. I'm probably doing a lot of service. Let me talk about my own experience. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous and immediately went into hospital and institution work. Hadn't done a step, hadn't read the book, did nothing, right? Now, what they told me where I got sober was that people who did hospital and institution work never relapsed. If you go to Oakland, California, you go to enough meetings, you'll still hear them saying that. I don't know if that's true. I have one date. And maybe it is because I was willing with little information to show up and help somebody else. I don't even have a judgment about that. I mean, you know, it's not like Ebby was floating when he talked to Bill, right? maybe that's good enough. But my experience is that that is going to be your sober. And I'm going to give you, here's an invitation. I'm going to invite you into something. If all you are is sober, you're missing the most extraordinary part of the opportunity that Alcoholics Anonymous has. You're missing being recovered. But before I go to the third part of the 12th step, I want to just take a minute and honor the importance of the second part of the first step. No matter what condition your life is in, I'm living at the Y, there's bed bugs, I'm marginally housed, I don't have a job, whatever your condition is, there's a service commitment that you can do, really, really, that meaningfully impacts somebody else's life, that invites them into the light. You can do phone service. You know, I like doing phone service for New York, right? It's the number that people call all over. They call that number. And it's really like a box of chocolates. You really don't know what you're going to get. Like, you might get the person who, you know, I answered the phone, and this woman told me that she knew the guy that started the meeting that was my home group when he was drunk, right? And like, he's like a soldier now. And I was like, you knew Drunk Matt? And she was like, I knew Drunk Matt, right? So this woman's sober for a long time. You talk to somebody, and they're like drunk out of their minds. You sound good. Sir, I could be a Cyclops, right? Like, you can get anything on the phone. But my job is to be there and answer the phone. And what do people usually want? They want to know, is there a way out? Is there hope? Is there a meeting? And anyone with a phone can do that anywhere in the world, any time of day or night. You know, we say that the most profound form of service is to walk somebody else to freedom. But here's what I think about that. The best way to learn something is to teach it. If you want to understand the book of Alcoholics Anonymous, crack that book. Man, war fever ran high. War fever ran high, war fever ran high, war fever ran. Just, oh, cracking the book, reading the book, reading the book, read. It's the magic book. Why is it the magic book? It's the magic book because I open it and there's something in there that I read that page before I didn't see. Here's what's magic. Me. Because I can only hear it my current level of understanding. And when I'm ready, more is revealed. In staying in the book, and I read the book to people that I'm not sponsoring. I do 10 steps with people I'm not sponsoring. Some of you, I'm going to just let the people remain nameless. Send people to me. Like, someone says they call you that you do like a 10 step. Well, sure, I'm going to do inventory with you, right? Because helping someone else helps me see myself. If you think that I am not crazy, that I don't make mistakes, that I don't misstep, that I don't treat people poorly. Okay, if you think I don't, what are you talking about? Like, we are all trudging the road of happy destiny. And sometimes I see me through you. That's one of the beauties of working with other people. And what am I doing? I'm carrying the messages found in the book to someone else. And in doing that, I see me. I'm cracked open. I'm helped. And so the second part, which is what we usually think the 12th step is, right? Carrying the message isn't the only part, but I promise you it's important. And I promise you that even though I do not want to do it, that I get more out of sponsoring people than they get out of me. I do. I get awakened. I get grateful. I get humbled. I get checked. I get pulled out of myself. You know, I don't know that I've said this, but you know, I'm a person who's always had suicide ideation, like my whole life, like as a little kid, like all the time. So I'm at, you know, my life is fabulous. And I'm at home like a few days ago and I'm in the bedroom and I think you should blow your brains out. And I laugh at myself because I don't own a firearm. Like, what are you talking about? Like, well, how's this gonna, it's, but I don't judge myself about it. It's not a sign of sadness. I don't know what to tell you, right? It's just what it is. And it's always been that way for me. But I'm not worried about it. You know, I'm not responsible for that first thought. It just is. Don't be sad for me. My life is fabulous. It just is. And so I say that because if you're suffering with that, I want you to know it's okay. It's okay. No matter where you are on the journey, it's okay. That, for me, is carrying the message. What is the message? There's joy, there's freedom, there's happiness as found in the 36 principles that are given to us by Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Bill. And it doesn't mean I'm perfect, but it means life's extraordinary, no matter what. I really want to take the rest of the time and talk about this third part of the 12th step. And I don't know that we talk enough about it. And I want to stop reading on page 103 with people because, you know, I want to watch Netflix, right? But reading the other chapters with people, right? Like, we forget there are so many spiritual principles into wives. Be patient. Be kind. You know what to say? This is getting heated. I think that we should wait. Can we talk about this later? One of my favorite things is, I think it's in the family afterwards, it says we should eat chocolate. Thank you, Bill, right? Thank you. Like, how do I think about the third part of the 12th step? I think about it as how I act when I leave you. See, I could levitate in a meeting for 60 minutes. Can levitate. Oh my God, I'm so spiritual, right? But that's not what matters. How am I in traffic? How am I with someone who believes something that I am morally, philosophically opposed to, that offends my very being? How am I with them? Because guess what? They deserve love and tolerance and respect too. How am I at my job? How do I treat the person in the cube next to me? Do I let somebody in traffic? Am I mad at the person who has coupons? Right? You ever go to a meeting at Alcoholics Anonymous and there's somebody who's maybe new and they're struggling with literacy? And then you're mad at them? Right? And I can treat another soul like that when I'm not conscious of the blessings that I'm standing in. When I can't look down and see the blessings that I'm standing in, then I can treat someone else like that. And the third part of the 12th step says to me, you've been pulled back from the gates of hell. You've been given a life beyond your wildest dreams, and it only gets better. Go out and practice it in every area of your life. Go out and demonstrate the power of what you have been given. And the book is really repetitive. It tells us the same thing over and over and over again, because I can argue that the third step prayer really in some ways talks about what we're going to talk about in 12, right? That it's asking me to go out and demonstrate the victory over my problems. That's what it said. And I said I was going to do that in 3. I'm going to read you something out of the book. Keys of the Kingdom. We often call it keys to, but it's not keys to the kingdom because I'm already inside. I'm already in the kingdom. Sylvia Kay wrote this. She was said to be the woman, the first woman in Alcoholics Anonymous with long-term sobriety out of Chicago. We think it's Marty Mann, but I understand it's Sylvia Kay. So the first full paragraph on that page, I'm going to read you the whole paragraph because for me, it really does demonstrate what this third part of the 12th step is like, what it's about. I quote, AA is not a plan for recovery that can be finished and done with. First sentence. So it is a plan for recovery, but it's not a plan for recovery that can be finished and done with. So it tells me it's a plan for recovery that I'm going to live in forever. Second sentence. It is a way of life. You see, as long as Alcoholics Anonymous, this is for real for anybody who's not living in joy. and you want to know why. If AA is an adjunct to the life that you already have, you're missing it. Alcoholics Anonymous becomes the foundation of my life. That's how I get to joy and freedom. I don't have a fabulous life and I'm adding on a meeting and I'm adding on a sponsor and I'm adding on a conference. It becomes a way of life. And it doesn't mean I give up those other things. It means that I re-envision my life, my priorities. It is foundational. The challenges contained in its principles is great enough to keep any human being striving for as long as he lives. You know how earlier in the book it tells us that is spiritual progress, not spiritual perfection? That tells us we're not saints. Like it's telling us that again. That the things that I'm asked to do, I promise I cannot keep all those balls in the air. I can't do it. I'm not perfect. Somebody's going to annoy me. I'm going to misstep. I'm not going to see that there's love on the table. I'm going to get afraid. And I'm nothing nice afraid. I mean nothing nice. And I don't want to live like that. But what I have to see is that I'm being given a challenge to grow. And that I'm never going to be perfect. And that's okay. As long as I can try to make tomorrow better than today. We do not, cannot outgrow this plan. You know, when I got to New Jersey, I found a home group, and there was a, you know, there's always a mayor of the meeting. There's like a mayor of the meeting. And he used to always say, this not no cap and gown program. This not no cap and gown program. This not, and I was like so sick of that, right? But what is he saying? That I'm not going to outgrow this. That I'm not going to ever be like recovered and think that I don't need AA anymore. I mean, I tried that. It did not end well for me, right? Nutty as fruitcake. Have you tried that? Have you thought like, oh, these people are on my nerves. I'm going to go away for a while. And then like, it's terrible. It's terrible. It's like driving on the rims. It's just terrible, right? So this is this thing where we're like always here, always growing, always. As arrested alcoholics, okay, they don't mean the handcuffs. As arrested alcoholics, we must have a program for living that allows for, and here's the first term, limitless expansion. What is she talking about? You know, the speakers have really been lovely. Like, it's just been a joy to be here with you guys. Thank you so much. Just really thank you. And people have talked about this, like, I get to this place. I think Ashley did a great job in 10, talking about like I get to this place where I'm living in a different realm, the realm of the spirit. And because of that, my craving's gone, right? Because I haven't had alcohol in me. The mental obsession is not like, just drive to the store. You're not going to go in. Okay, you could go in, but you're not going to buy a bottle. Okay, you're going to buy the bottle, but you're not going to drink it. Okay, you're going to crack the top, but you're not, right? That's gone. That part of me is arrested. It's locked up. It's not gone, though. It'll come back. But as arrested alcoholics, what do I have? It says I have a program for living, not a program I visit. Not a meeting I go to, not a group I belong to, a program for living that allows for limitless expansion. If you could have something in an unlimited way, what would it be? What would it be? Unlimited joy, unlimited freedom, unlimited love, unlimited health, unlimited prosperity, unlimited acceptance. What would you have? Unlimited expansion. Not that the thing that you get is limitless, but that the expansion of the thing you get is limitless. What? Okay, let me keep it going for you. Keeping one foot in front of the other. You know, somebody's first step is somebody else's 12th step, right? Keeping one foot in front of the other is essential to maintaining our arrestment. I'm in Oakland, California. I'm less than a year sober. I found a home group, The Wrap at Noon, that met Monday through Friday at lunchtime. And, you know, I think I'm smart, but it hadn't fully occurred to me that I could drink again once I was in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't even know what to say about that. And I think it was at a time like we didn't clap for newcomers. Like if you were, we just didn't. You just came in and sat down, got a cup of coffee, right? And so I wasn't conscious of people coming and going. It just wasn't a part, I just wasn't conscious of it. And a guy came into the meeting and said that he had had 10 years. Now, for, you know, I have 36 years, there are people, I usually say this, I didn't. I know that somebody thinks I'm lying because when I got here, I thought that people who said they had time were lying. It was inconceivable to me. It's inconceivable. So the guy said he had 10 years and I was a couple months sober, and he said he relapsed, and I was like, oh my God, like it shook me to my core. Like if he could drink after 10 years, like it could happen. It could happen. Right? Was he practicing the principles in all of his affairs? You know what he said? Because I kept asking, what happened, what happened, what happened? Like a pest. I was scared. Sometimes fear is not bad. He said that you can only coast one way, downhill. So when it says practice the principles in all of our affairs, the consideration is, are you practicing the principles in all your affairs? Because if you're not, you're coasting. And if you're coasting, which way are you going? Because you can only coast one way. You cannot coast up into a spiritual experience. You cannot coast up into joy. You cannot coast up into freedom. You just can't do it. And what it tells me is I have to keep one foot. I don't have to leap. I don't have to know good footwork. I can stumble one foot in front of the other, which I do. One foot in front of, that's all that's required to practice the principles in all of my affairs. Others, not the normies, the people who are not addicted to alcohol, others may idle in a retrogressive groove. What is a retrogressive groove? It's going backwards. It's regressing, and it's just in a going backward groove. And I can't do that. That's why I think that this third part of the 12th step is so important. I'm not practicing the principles in all of my affairs for you. I'm practicing the principles in all of my affairs for me. Because if I don't, I'm coasting. If I don't, I have the risk of being in a retrogressive groove. If you're doing the same thing now that you were doing a year ago or 2 years ago and 5 years ago, I just want to say there's more love available. There's more freedom available. There's more joy available. Get yourself a service commitment. Stalk newcomers. You know what to do? You know, there's always column one for me. O-L-I-S. There's always column one. Go to some of those meetings that are middle of the road, where they're talking about the problem. I'm sorry. I call them the cat lady meetings. You go to meetings and people are, I'm sorry, they're talking about their cat, right? That my cat, my lawnmower, my parents came, they won't leave. And I think that I share the mess with my sponsor, I share the solution at the meeting. But go to a meeting where the people are, I went to a meeting and spoke in, and it was one of those meetings that after you speak, they mute you. And this woman put her hand up and said, I hate the happy people. Too bad for you, right? I can't even be mad at you about that, right? But here's a tip. Go to those meetings and get you some phone numbers for the people that are miserable. Sign up to be a part of the team for this next year. Get yourself a phone commitment, a sponsee. Rocket your own. This is the only person that can do it. Rocket your own recovery. Practicing the principles where? In all of my affairs. Okay. However, this is the part I love about this paragraph. It isn't as rough as it sounds. As we do become grateful for the necessity that makes us toe the line, and we find that we are compensated for a consistent effort by the countless dividends we receive. So the third part of the 12th step, right? I need to learn how to go out into the world and practice these principles everywhere. Accountability, restitution, integrity, honesty, all of them. Every love and tolerance needs to be my code. I could fake it in the meeting with you. I might be able to get through the business meeting. I mean, me probably not, but maybe, right? But for sure, I can't get through the holiday dinner or the, you know what I mean? The supermarket line, the right? The merge in the traffic. We are saints, and then don't let us get in traffic. But it's all of our affairs. It's everywhere, which is why the chapter is to your intimate partner, to wives, the family. You know, the family afterwards is hilarious. It's like, so now you don't got sober. Now you want to, you think you Jesus. You want to go home and preach to the people, right? Or you going to work all the time. Like, how do I find balance in my life? How do I find balance in my life? And how am I on my job? There are spiritual principles all throughout those chapters. Those chapters help us see ourselves in context, not in a meeting, not with a sponsee, in context. You know, I hadn't planned to, but I was called to read the Sylvia Kay paragraph because to me, it's such a beautiful invitation and promise. Limitless expansion, countless dividends. I want to talk about the countless dividends part. Nobody comes to Alcoholics Anonymous that I've met on a good day. Nobody I've ever met says, things are going great, my career is good, I've got lots of money, the people that know me respect me. I feel in possession of myself. I know that God loves me. I feel good. And I think I'm going to stop drinking. I've never heard that. Never. I might be the last person to know drinking is the problem. That was the truth for me. I had the gift of seeking lower companionship. Anybody else do that? Right? Yeah. Because as long as I could be better than you, then I didn't have to look at me. I was in a relationship with somebody and it didn't go well. And I said to somebody else, like, you know, blah, 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 about them. And they were like, well, you the person that's boo, 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 right? And I had to look at myself. I wasn't the first person to know that alcohol was the problem. In fact, I went to a therapist and the therapist said, thank God she didn't tell me that she thought I had a drinking problem. She said that I should just, there was an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting around the corner and I should go there and I should try Al-Anon and then just, you know, try not to drink for 90 days. And if I drank, it wasn't a big deal, just start all over again and pay attention to how long it takes. What? That's in May and I'm struggling. That was before May, because by May I figured it out. So I'm struggling to get this little 90 days, right? Because it's always a reason. There's a party. People are coming over. Like somebody gave me a bottle. The free drinks. It's, what are you talking about? It's happy hour. Like, right? There was always a legitimate, for me, reason. So I couldn't see myself. But ultimately, I feel like I'm at a jumping off place. I come to, for me, a spiritual death. I come to Alcoholics Anonymous and my soul is on fire. And you guys help me get relief. Then you help me get to freedom. And then I get too busy to be bothered with you. And then I'm sober. And then I'm going to go around and fix everybody else's life. Let me tell you about you, what you need to do, how you need to act. That is not practicing the principles in all of my affairs. So this third part, which I think this paragraph talks about, is this experience where I'm pulled back from the gates of hell and I'm given the gift. And if I consistently work the tools, the simple spiritual tools you've given me, I get a reward for getting the gift. That's what practicing the principles in all of my affairs does. It gives me a reward for getting the gift. The gift is that I'm free from the compulsion to drink. I'm free from the obsession. And if you're here, you've landed in a sober community. You've landed with a group of people who know the way out. Not all of the people in Alcoholics Anonymous know the way out. That's the truth. My friend Marty C. says there's a club inside the club. You're with a group of people who know the way out. And if you want to continue expanding the joy, the freedom, the happiness, the usefulness, to see the light come on in somebody else's eye, to hold the door for somebody. You ever hold the door for somebody and they don't say thank you, and then you say, you welcome. like they asked you to hold the door. Did you do it because you being a good person, or you want a parade? I get sober and I want you to give me I should get some reward for not burning my life to the ground. And what it tells me is that I'm invited into this third and final part. And it means that I take the things that you've taught me out into the world, that I make the world a better place, that I'm kind, that I'm loving, that I'm considerate. That's the charge. That's the assignment. That's the opportunity. That sure, the first part, I can go out and work all the steps and have a spiritual awakening and leave. And some people do. They do. But what is my obligation back to the society that saved my life? Do I owe a debt? I do. I can pay that debt by carrying the message. But if I'm paying that debt by carrying the message and I'm not practicing the principles in all of my affairs, I am not going to get limitless expansion and countless dividends. I'm going to be the grumpy old timer by the coffee pot, right? I'm going to be bitter. I'm going to be judgmental. I'm going to be unkind. That I have to continue to expand my own capacity to not only receive joy, but to give joy. It's late and I'm exhausted. I'm going to tell you one more thing. And Arisa's just going to be mad at me because I didn't talk my whole hour. But I'm going to give you this last thing I got. When I talked about step one, I said that there were three parts, right? I'm bodily sick. I drink, I get thirsty. I'm mentally ill. There's a voice in my head that is always telling me that there's ease and comfort outside of me and God. Whatever you think God is, whatever you call the Creator. And that I have a spiritual illness that tells me I'm not ill, that tells me the problem is you, and that tells me that I have to hide who I am in order to even be among you, that I am broken in a way that is irreparable, irredeemable, and I think that is the malady. And it shows up in that I'm restless, I'm irritable, I'm discontent. Again, my favorite, I'm self-righteous, right? I'm all of these things that actually push you away from me when all I want to do is be loved. I mean, when you stand back and look at it, you can see the insanity. And then I tried to explain to you that in the fourth step in the resentment inventory, there's a part, right, the sex inventory that's about body. There's a part that's about the spirit, there's a part that's about the mind, right? But the same is true here. The same is true here. That this 12th step encompasses all parts of me, right? I would argue that when I am doing the first part of the 12th step, right? Having had a spiritual awakening, that my spirit is awakened and it speaks to my spirit. That when it talks about I'm carrying the message, I do that in unity and that's my body. And then when it talks about I have to go out into the world and do this everywhere, I have to be thoughtful about that. I have to be conscious. You know, Risa said something that I love, that I came to, that meditation in the book, as it talks about in the 11th step, isn't lotus position. It is contemplation. It is I'm thoughtful. I pick things up, I turn them over, I look at them, and I ask myself, why do I feel like that? Why do I react like that? Why did I say that? Why didn't I do that? In this third part of the 12th step, it really, for me, is similar. In every moment out in the world, I have an opportunity to practice the principles everywhere. At the convenience store, at the gas station, everywhere. On that long line in Costco, everywhere. I get to do it everywhere. And I have to be thoughtful. I have to be mindful. I have to be conscious. I have to be intentional to do that. That if I let my mind drift away onto the, because it does, onto me, my problems, my situations, my needs, my desires, my wants, my ambition, my safety, if I do that, I'm not available to practice the principles in all of my affairs. I can't see you. I can't be bothered. And so this three parts of the 12th step take us back in many ways to the first step, that it encompasses for me such an important part of the solution to my three-part problem. And I would argue that when you look at it coming back, right, if I'm not practicing the principles in all of my affairs, and it doesn't mean I'm perfect, but it means I'm trying. Let the person in traffic, come on now. What does it matter? I'll say this. I am perpetually lost, and I travel, and I rent cars, and I'm lost in those cars in your cities. And I miss my turn. Let me in. Maybe I'm not the person that's just trying to save time. But maybe I am and I'm late and it's my last time. They're going to fire me. I don't know. But what kindness can I offer you? What consideration? Which is easier to do when I know that I'm standing in blessings. That I know that I'm sober, that I know I've been pulled back from the gates of hell, that I know that I've got a community, I've got a fellowship, I got people that care about me. I got a place to sleep, I got food, I got, you know, whatever is important to you. When you know that you're standing in blessings, share them. Share them. Because the funny thing about doing that is that they come back. The joy comes back. That's what I think the limitless expansion's about. That's what I think the countless dividends are about. They don't just come to me. They come to me when I put things out to you. In this, obviously, in Alcoholics Anonymous, I need to be, if you do not have a service position, and you know, I'm tired, so I'm going to ask grace. If you right now are sober, and you're not doing anything to get anybody else sober, I would say you could consider whether or not you're a spiritual thief. Whether or not you're eating from the table but not giving anything. Whether or not you're a taker. And in the chapter, interestingly enough, working with others, you know what it says? It says I change from going into situations, thinking of what I can get out of it, and think only of what I can give, which is why I can go to sordid places and not worry about it. What you drink don't get me drunk. And I can do that because my focus isn't on me. My focus is on what can I bring to this. So if you're not sponsoring people, that's not for everybody, I understand. If you're not answering the phone, if you're not on a committee, if you're not in a service position in your home group, here's the thing that you can also do. Go to other people's meetings and stand at the door and greet everybody and piss everybody else off. Be a greeter. Here's the other thing. Stop in advance and buy food and take food to the meeting. Take food to the meeting. There are all kinds of ways that you are in a position to carry the message. There are all kinds of ways that you're in a position to practice this everywhere. And I'm not suggesting it's easy, but I'm suggesting that there's no better deal in town. I'm suggesting by doing it, you are promised limitless expansion. That's been my experience. Countless dividends. That's been my experience. I'm born and raised in New York City. I'm the third of four girls. My mother was a sporting woman. I grew up in what people call the life. Talk among yourselves. My mother ran a house of ill repute. Talk among yourselves. And I grew up with everything's a hustle. Grifting was a way of life. My only reason to interact with you was to get, so it's the only reason. Why would I talk to you? And I've come from that person to this person. It's a long way. Was it easy? Absolutely not. Was it worth it? I'm so overpaid. I'm so overpaid. That no matter where you are right now, you can have a life beyond your wildest dreams. How? The work. That's how you get butter out of milk. The work. I hope that that was useful. I hope that you guys got something out of that. Before I close, I want to say what an honor it was. Like, I was given the opportunity to talk about step one, which is the problem. I got to talk about the inventory and got to talk about the fifth step. And then I got to talk about 12. Like, what an incredible honor. Thank you for trusting me.